Mini episode 1732 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1732. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you today with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, our FDH Hoops analyst, Ben Hsu. And it is time to take a look at the 2024 NBA Draft. And this is one where, again, coming off of last year and all of the hype around Wemby with the number one pick and, to a certain extent, Scoot Henderson. This is a little bit of a different vibe to this year's draft, and that is putting it mildly in terms of, again, even the top players in this draft seem like they're going to be projects to some degree. Everybody's going to take an amount of development. And I can tell everybody that, again, right now in development, what you will be seeing not long after this podcast goes up, Pro Hoops Draftology 2024, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And for our cover story on the draft, just kind of summing it up a little bit, Ben, the working headline right now is this draft class can be summed up in two words, oy vey. Do you concur?
I don't necessarily concur, but this does have very notable shades of the infamous 2001 NBA draft that Kenyon Martin went overall number one in. So
okay.
It's going to be a very interesting timeline. A lot of project guys, a lot of solid guys, no real superstars at the top at this time. But as we've seen with some of these bad drafts, there are some really high-level all-star talent that is available.
Is there any chance whatsoever that this turns into, I would place it at probably no better than a 5 to 10% chance, that this is the 2011 draft all over again, the loaded draft that nobody saw coming? Everybody thought it was basically Kyrie Irving and Derek Williams at the top and nobody else. And you look at all the guys that came out of that, Klay Thompson, all the way down to Isaiah Thomas, I think, who was the very last pick in the draft. All the guys, and guys like Tristan Thompson, who've had a long and at least very solid career. It is a draft that was a lot higher level than anybody thought. It's one of the great draft classes of the 21st century, and I remember crapping on it at the time, as did most of the pundits. Any chance whatsoever we're ever going to look at this draft the same way as that one?
I mean, I think so. There are some guys on here that we have to remember there were at least timelines here where three or four different players were projected as the overall number one pick.
Okay.
And it kind of feels like, too, that just looking at this scenario, that a lot of the teams near the top are teams that if they get one or two guys can bolt them back into the playoff chase relatively quickly. So I do think there's the potential for that. It's going to go, Rick, it's going to go either that one of two ways. It's either that draft or it's the 0-1 draft. Either it's just a barren wasteland of like two or three guys who made it, or a scenario where it's a deep draft and there's like three or four all-star caliber players and then a handful of rotation guys.
Well, here's the thing. I look at this and I think, I mean, if we're grading it on the sense of rotation players, I mean, I think that there's, you know, probably 20 to 25 guys in this draft that you could make a very, very strong case for being that. But the problem is you're getting into like the top 10 and maybe even further up when you start to make that designation versus, generally speaking, you like to think you get past the lottery part of the draft and maybe into the 20s where you're setting your sights on getting rotation players. And this is a draft where, again, even in the top 10, I mean, teams are going to be hopeful that these guys can exceed that, of course. But, you know, you're at this point, and Alexander Sarr looks to be going first to Atlanta. And, again, everything that he brings to bear presently, as far as being such a defensive stopper and the things that he presently is most noted for, they already have in Clint Capella. Now, they're hoping that he's going to develop a three-point shot, but, again, and supposedly he has shown at least some potential degree for doing so. But for the most part, hope is not a strategy. And everybody's always hoping that the seven-footers that they draft are going to be able to develop a three in today's game. So you're picking a guy at number one in Atlanta, if indeed they go that way, where they're hoping he's going to be better than what they already have. I mean, I think that kind of says it all.
Right, and I think Sar probably, for most of the offseason leading into the playoffs, or in the, not the offseason, but more of the NBA draft mock offseason sort of picking up, like, Sar is consensus in most drafts usually the number one. I mean, he showed flashes of his time at Overtime Elite and then also his time with the Perth Wildcats of the NBL, that he's a good, he can be a rim protector, he can spread the floor. He's not exactly a playmaker, but he definitely has the ability to be a connector on offense. And for a team like Atlanta that needs sort of another rim-running threat or a guy that can pick and pop, whether it's with Trae Young or DeJounte Murray, I kind of feel like Sar is overall their best scenario. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Donovan Klingon of UConn is also in the mix. And also, we know the Atlanta Hawks' affinity for small forwards who can create their own shot, and Zachary Richochet is also going to be on their list as well.
Yes, could be one of the two Frenchies in that spot there. I mean, if it's Donovan Klingon going to number one, that really shows you, because you've got him vaulting up during the draft process here, as well as Stephen Castle. Really, what they did during the NCAA tournament, neither one of these guys, I don't think, was really projected for the lottery, and both are strong possibilities to go top 10. Klingon could go top 5. You've just potentially fingered him there for number 1, and you can see why that would be the case. I mean, it is such a mixed bag at the top as far as guys who could be in that spot. And again, you've got a number of players there. Mattis Bouzelis is another guy that is getting a lot of run in these spots here. And somebody who, again, is thought to be coming out of the G League, somebody who could be able to create his own shot a little bit here. And presently, I've got him. I don't know if I'll have him that in the final mock. Presently, I've got him going to Detroit. And certainly, he fits exactly the bill of what Detroit needs at this point, among other things.
Right. And he was very early on in the mock draft process, the overall number one.
Mm-hmm.
For a good time there until G League Ignite season moved forward and didn't really, you know, he had some flashes of great play. And he also had the memorable moment during the Rising Stars Challenge as well for Team G League. But the question ultimately with him is going to be, is he's still very young. He is still a little inconsistent from three. He's a big body, though. He's 6'9", 6'10". There's not a lot of... He kind of slots into that role that a lot of teams right now are really looking for. A guy who is, you know, a guy who can create mismatches, create his own shot, but also at the same point too, Rick, he's also someone that is not a turnstile on defense.
Yes, and that is definitely something that a lot of teams need to have, and he could fit very well into that. When you talk about the G League, one of the guys who's really fallen off during the course of the season perceptually, a threat to go number one going into the season, Ron Holland. And I'm really kind of surprised at this point, the way that he seems to be dipping. Presently in the mock that I'm doing, I have him going number 7 to Portland, so perhaps you'll be seeing him up close next year. On CBSSports.com, they have a column with pro comps here, and that is one where they've got him comped out to Michael Bridges. And that's something where you would think that he would at least have the potential of reaching that point. By the way, a Kyle Boone column on CBSSports.com to give him the credit for this. So if you've got a guy who's a potential Michael Bridges there in the top 10, you'd think that's something that you'd be looking at, because that's a guy that I think of as being, he's not a superstar, but he is a star caliber player, I would say. And that's a thing where you would really think that that's something the teams would be looking for in the top 10 with the lowered expectations this year.
It's one thing we've talked about too, and I think I mentioned it earlier with Donovan Kling, is like, Alexander Sar, is that teams right now, especially today's NBA, due to the salary cap, don't have a lot of money to spend on free agency as much as they used to. So there, you're going to be looking for guys who can be connective tissue to your team at this point, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. If you look at Holland, he had a disappointing shooting year for G League Ignite, yeah. But he has all the physical capabilities. He has a good vertical jump, can get to the basket at periods of time. So it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up, because it would help him playing off with a point guard who is, you know, can help spread the floor and get him room. Because the one issue that G League Ignite had this year was they didn't really have a true point guard on their roster. So it's a lot of young guys trying to make a lot of plays for themselves, but they're all either small forward, shooting guards, or big guys. So with a lack of true point there, I'm skeptical that a lot of these guys couldn't have been better if they had a little bit more backcourt depth at that point. But
yeah,
it's going to be an interesting scenario for him, because he's one of those guys who we've talked about this too, guys like Klay Thompson, guys like CJ McCollum, guys who were like good players in college or showed flashes during their time in either college or G League, where they have the opportunity to be a real good starting caliber player for a roster.
Yes, and that's a very important thing here as well. And for that reason, you look at a young team like San Antonio and the way that they're looking to build around Wemby, and you and I have long talked about this, long linked to San Antonio in the draft. Nikola Topic out of Serbia, who you first mentioned to me off the air previously, and then I saw news reports on it. Apparently a torn ACL suffered recently. There was thought that he had had a knee injury that just became exacerbated by that. Whatever the story is, that's a thing where San Antonio, they got a pick at 4, they got a pick at 8. You got to think at 4. A lot of people had him mocked at 4 to them. That's probably off the board. But them taking him at 8, you got to think is not, because, again, San Antonio, they're in a long-term build. Perfect draft and stash, if you want to call it that. I mean, obviously, they're going to hope to have him in there and playing before the end of the season. But it's not even like they necessarily need to do that. They've been linked to Darius Garland in draft talks. Whether or not they go get a point guard, this is a situation where Topic, at his height, can play the shooting guard position there. And that gives you a little bit of versatility, what teams are looking for there. He can be a secondary playmaker on the floor when matched with a regular point guard at that position, or he can take over the point guard position and have somebody else playing shooting guard. So for San Antonio, taking him at 8, even though he's not going to be available for probably the first half of the season, if not longer, it makes sense as a long-term play building around Wemby to have a guy like that, and somebody who I think a lot of scouts have looked at him like, yeah, that's a guy that can establish chemistry with Wemby.
Right, and it makes a lot of sense there, too. I would make the argument, too, Rick, that Topic could go sooner at 4 just because there are some teams just in between San Antonio who could sniff around. So it wouldn't be surprising if the Spurs, as we've known, their penchant for drafting European talent is just bringing someone in at the 4 and then stashing them later.
Sure.
But another guy who we have to also mention that is an interesting play for them would be Rob Dillingham of Kentucky.
Right.
Obviously, Topic is more of a playmaker, a bigger body, but Dillingham does have the size and speed that a lot of NBA teams covet, especially with a guy like Victor Wembanyama who has the ability to score from anywhere on the floor. I make the argument, too, that if you don't think Topic is ready, or if they're, it would not shock me or surprise me to see San Antonio but essentially pick Dillingham now just to see him, make him into a six-man sort of player.
I can understand that, and that is something that they could do, again, as they're assembling their not only starting lineup, but rotation of the future. And another player in this mix here, as far as somebody who could play potentially shooting guard or more likely point guard in a full-time capacity. And I fully expected that you were going to bust my onions when I had him number one on the board overall. Reed Sheppard out of Kentucky. And that's a guy that I look at as far as being sort of a proto-Mark Price in today's game. A guy who certainly can facilitate, create his own offense, shoot the ball. There are questions about him vis-a-vis his ceiling. Like what you're seeing at Kentucky, is that as good as he's going to get? That seems to be the rap on him, because while he's number one on my board, on most boards, he's probably floating more around 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6. And indeed, in my most recent mock draft, I've got him going 6 to Charlotte. So that's a guy where opinions certainly vary.
And I think he's one of the, he was one of those guys during the regular season where Kentucky was a very good regular season team in the SEC. And I think, I give him credit because he's a very good defender, can definitely hit threes. But that loss to Oakland, in my opinion, didn't really hurt his draft status, but made him more of a question mark on NBA rosters at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like for him, he's going to be the classic guy who's going to get overdrafted, but his skill set should not be questioned at all. It's just more in terms of, in most drafts, if you're taking three at three, you're probably not taking an undersized point guard who has a shaky shot at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, it's going to all depend on what the various decision makers think of him as far as where he slots in. And again...
Oh, and also, too, Rick, we have to also note this, too, that with Houston being at three, there is also a scenario where someone could trade up to get Reed Shepard, or a scenario where a team trades up to get another guy where Shepard drops because of that.
Yes. Well, I've presently got a guy mocked going three to Houston coming out of my beloved Tennessee. I've got Dalton Knecht going three. He's not going that high on many boards, but that's a situation where you could see him fitting in with the way that Houston does their roster building and with their need to kind of keep loading up at swingman. They've got a couple of them on their roster, but that's certainly a place where they need to keep adding bodies.
Yeah, and Connect has definitely is one of those guys coming out of college who did benefit from the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
And I do feel like, especially with the league putting a premium on shooting and his ability to get to the basket, during his time at Tennessee, you can really see him being a guy that could go to a team like Detroit or a team like San Antonio or even a team like Portland to give them some more outside shooting, but also a guy who isn't afraid to go into the paint.
Yes, very good point. Yes, he definitely, him and the tennis or the Connecticut guys, certainly they raised their profile during the NCAA tournament. And a guy who somewhat fell off perceptually during the year, I mentioned Ron Holland before. Somebody who was universally being mocked in the top five, if not top three or four coming into the season, was Cody Williams of Colorado. FDH senior editor Jason Jones, of course, covering him up close for Sports Illustrated during the season. He has slipped now to where he may not even go in the top 10. He remains somebody that has potentially a pretty good ceiling. And again, in this draft here, that is somewhat lacking in guys that you look at and you think to themselves that they could have a very strong ceiling. It would surprise me if he fell out of the top 10 in that way, but very possibly, particularly if teams are going for need and if they don't really need a swing man, although there are not a lot of teams in this league right now where you could say that about them. So you would think that he would be going pretty high up in there. And another interesting prospect from Colorado as well, who Jason got a chance to see a lot during the year, Tristan Da Silva. I am joining right now in with what a lot of mocks are doing and putting him at 20 to the Cavs. And that's a guy who seems to fit in very well as far as what they could use for a stretch four. So it'll be very interesting to see where both of these guys go and how the teams are looking to have them fit into their existing rotations.
Right, and I would argue, too, Rick, at this point, he's a guy that was pretty much five for most of the mock draft period, but then some of these guys who had great tournament performances sort of moved up. But Colorado was a very interesting team all season in the Pac-12, and it kind of felt like to me, if you watch some of their tournament games, that they are both very skilled sort of three-tool guys, essentially, at the end. I mean, you could argue 3-and-D, but I also know that, you know, that can be a misnomer at times. But I'd make the argument that I don't think either of them are... I think we're in this weird timeline in the NBA where teams are looking for guys who have more defined roles, and during their time in Colorado, I don't really feel like Cody Williams or Tristan Da Silva really had a defined role on that team, so... You're trying to look at everything sort of opaquely and just trying to see, like, what they could be. Like, one of the comps I saw on a Bleacher Report for Cody Williams is Jaden McDaniels. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see some of these guys. But they, and again, I'll note this for both of them, they both have the talent to be really good players. And it would not surprise me if eventually one of them became an all-star at some point.
Well, that would be very interesting, particularly in the case of Da Silva, the way that he's being mocked right now. And that was one where ultimately, when Jason started telling me, describing him as a player, what he'd seen up close, that's where I became very excited at the prospect of him coming to the Cavs, because that's a thing where, again, help in that front court, particularly if you get the sense that it may not be Allen and Mobley long for this roster, i.e. that Allen may be moving on. They're going to need more bodies to come in and be able to fill spots there, and the thought of Da Silva in that spot is pretty exciting to me as a lifelong Cavs fan. And as far as the greatest Cav of all time, his son is being mocked to the Lakers. It's just a question right now of whether it's the first round or the second round. I was seeing enough evidence that it seemed persuasive enough that the Lakers might be desperate enough to take Bronny James at 17, which is something that, again, no offense to him, but nobody on God's green earth is going to do on the merits of the situation. But again, he has had, I will say, as far as during the combine and during the kind of off-season period here, being able to do the workouts and everything like that, I mean, he is somebody that is rising up in estimation to where he would be a legitimate second-round pick, particularly mid to later second round. And some of the players that he is kind of identifying with, from what I'm seeing with from interviews and everything like that, that, like, you know, in a perfect world, maybe he could be Derek White. I mean, you got to say, I mean, he's pretty realistic about, you know, where he fits in on a team. His outside shot's going to have to fall a lot better for him to ever be a Derek White. But again, he seems to have a more realistic view of what his place could be in the NBA than do a lot of the outside people who put expectations on him because of his last name and his genetics.
Yeah, and just based off of all the analysis we've read and what Bronny is at a period of time in his career, he's still a very young raw basketball player, and you saw flashes of his time at USC where he was a really, you could see like where we thought he was going to be, but ultimately, it's going to be determinant, and we all know this at the end of the day, it's going to be the card game of if you draft Bronny, does LeBron come with him? And it would not shock me to see a team like the Lakers push up to make sure that LeBron stays with them. Or it would not shock me if a team trades up into the first round to try and take him on the scenario where LeBron could come play for them. So,
yeah, and I just in looking at this,
I don't think it's as likely as we think, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Well, and I've been making the joke for a long time now that if a team like Charlotte was to draft him, you're going to have Rich Paul walking into the front office saying, nice try, here's a list of teams that we approve for you to trade him to. So, you know, that's one of those things where a team may try and do that as a backdoor way of recruiting LeBron a little bit early, but the likeliest thing is that the Lakers will do it as part of a peacemaking operation to try and keep him there, particularly if they end up going a different direction than J.J. Redick as head coach. So that is something that basically bears watching. But again, he doesn't seem as likely to go first round as I thought when I was first working on my mock drafts about a week or so ago. I will say also, too, perceptually in terms of some major college players at the center position here, trying to figure out where they fit into today's NBA, it is very interesting. Probably somewhere in the teens, you're looking at both Kyle Filipowski of Duke as well as Zach Edey of Purdue going. And Zach Edey, yet another guy who raised his stock during the NCAA tournament. It's not always possible to do the way that some of these guys were able to do this year, but in a year where nobody's really blowing your hair back, there is an opportunity to make more of an impression comparatively as far as at least to the rest of the field on this. But where these guys fit into today's NBA, the draft projections for them seem somewhat cautious. That, like, they can come in, they can do a solid job at that position. And, you know, I would think, you know, in a perfect world right now, as far as being able to give contributions there, in a perfect world, you're probably looking at either one of these guys coming in and making the impact of a Derek Lively, I would think.
Right, and it's going to be very interesting because Edey, perceptionally, is a guy who wouldn't fit in today's NBA, but we did see during the Purdue's run to the national championship that if you can put him in situations where he can get shots or get easy baskets, it would make sense. Another guy, too, Rick, that we also have to know for the center position, Khalil Ware of Indiana,
yeah,
is also starting to rise up the draft board as sort of a, you know, 7-foot flexi guy who can hit the three but also play good defense in the perimeter, and a guy that has also been in the international circles, that OKC at San Antonio, beloved Tashay Solon from Yes. France of Colette has also been someone that's been kind of a, he might be this draft Osmian Dang, but it's a very interesting scenario. And I think also, too, if we go back to guys like Donovan Klingon and Sar too, is that they all are very unique talents, and they all have things that are positive about them. But in comparison to, let's say, Wemby, who was just an athletic marvel, they all kind of have holes in their games, whether it's on offense or on defense. And I feel like this could be one of those drafts, too, that since there isn't a lot of talent just overall in this draft class, that teams are may fall back to the old ways of maybe just taking the big guy who has the potential to become a great player.
Very possibly. And in the case of Salon, right now I've presently got him mocked for, and I feel very, very badly for him with this being the case, number 11 at Chicago, the way that he's been rising up. And that's a situation where I would feel so terrible for that kid if he ended up there, because in terms of their perennial delusion that they're a playoff caliber team and we're playing for this year, dag nabbit, I mean, that's the last place, if you're a developmental guy like him that has a pretty good ceiling, I would think that's the last place you want to be. So here's hoping that he gets to a place that can potentially take advantage of the ceiling that we know that he has.
Right, and he's, again, one of those guys on the international side and is going to be a very, I would say, interesting player just in terms of that, too.
Yes, I would think
so. It's just going to be very, you know, just overall very interesting. Another guy we also have to note, too, would be Ivy Messi of Baylor, too. He's also been floating around in the lottery timeline, so.
Yes, he has the possibility of getting up there. I have seen him going as high as at the tail end of that, potentially. And some guys that are really rising up at this point in time here. A guy who, notwithstanding the fact that he's rising up, I only right now have him mocked out 15 to Miami. But Devin Carter, the point guard out of Providence, he has been one of the guys turning heads during the other draft season.
Right, and some other guys we also would be, you know, very remiss not to talk about. Jacoby Walter of Baylor has also been floating around during the lottery as well, so I'm not really surprise. It's going to be really interesting to see, because a lot of people are talking him as a 3-and-D guy, a la sort of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Other sort of names that are floating around there too, Duke's Jared McCain. A lot of people like his shooting ability. Some people think that he could be a guy off the bench that could really get you easy baskets. And another guy who I've been seeing floating around the Cavs second pick of the the Cavs area of the first round, a guy like Carlton Carrington of Pittsburgh is arguably one of the, unless I'm mistaken, is one of the biggest wingspans of any guard out there right now. So,
yes.
Again, this strikes me, going back to your original question, this is a very deep draft with a lot of good players and potentially 2 to 4 superstar players.
Yes.
But again, we also know, too, this could also be a scenario where some of the better players may be deeper down in this draft class.
Well, and that's it. And that, like, if a Ron Holland becoming a Michael Bridges-type player, that might mark him as being one of the very best players in this draft. It might be that getting somebody that's at a star level but not superstar level, there's a chance that that's the best that you're going to get out of this draft class. And Carrington, yes, one of the attributes that works in his favor is, like you said, there's the wingspan, 6'5", but a natural position of point guard. So much like Topic out of Serbia, somebody who can at least defensively play the two, and again, allow you to be a little bit creative in the backcourt and have two legitimate playmakers in there at the same time. And speaking of guys in the backcourt here, something that just came out the other day that was basically affecting the draft status one way or another of Terrence Shannon Jr. out of Illinois, who was acquitted on charges of Roethlisbergering somebody, shall we say. So with him having been acquitted of that, that puts him in play, and he's a probable late first-round player as well.
Right. And again, another couple of guys that have also been kind of floating around the first round. Tyler Smith, a G League Ignite, looked good during the G League Ignite team run during the Rising Stars Challenge. And one guy who's kind of been a little bit of a, I would say, question mark after his sort of mess season at USC, Isaiah Collier, is still sort of floating around in the first round. So,
yeah.
It's a very deep cut. Bobby Clintman's also a guy that relatively in that lottery timeline, but he has kind of fallen off after the draft combine to the lower in the first round. But it's really interesting, right? And also, we also have to mention, if you're also looking for QT, Dryden Murphy of Kansas is also out there as well. So,
yes.
Again, this feels like if you wanted to put a sort of another two-word sentence on this draft, right? This feels like connective tissue. This is what this draft is. I don't think we're going to see many superstars, but we're going to see a lot of guys a lot of years in the NBA.
Solid contributors, yes. I think it could be deep in solid contributors. Daron Holmes II, as I said to you off-air, I'd read a report, I don't remember where, but that Oklahoma City might have given him a draft guarantee at 12, which, A, I find weird positionally, because you would think that they'd first be looking at a swing man, and B, that seems to be above what his draft value is. But that is something that would kind of shake things up a little bit if they ended up doing that, because that means that a player that is perceived to be valued higher is going to fall to somebody else in here. And you start getting into the second round here off of the first round. Some of the names we mentioned are going to drop, obviously, to the second round. And so there may be some relative values there. I mean, you know, let's not get crazy with this when we're talking about value. I had somebody pitch me. I won't mention his name because I'm going to mock this. And I don't mean mock in the sense of mock draft, but mock the notion of it. So one of my good friends, a contributor to the show, who shall remain nameless, was pitching I think he maybe seen this somewhere, but a scenario where Darius Garland to Houston in a deal that was built around the third pick in the draft and Fred VanVleet. And I'm like, what does Fred VanVleet do to change the dynamic of the backcourt? If you're doing that, he's another, small guard. And, the third pick in this draft, make it the third pick in next year's draft and we'll have a conversation, although Houston wouldn't be offering the third pick in next year's draft if they had it. So the teams are not going to be able to get much of anything for that. As far as, the draft picks in there, they may make moves here, but it's not going to be like, OMG, got to trade up to, the top five, got to trade up to whatever. Any trades that happen will be purely situational. If a team sees a guy available who could fit into their rotation or they like his upside or whatever, but the usual notion of like, oh, if I get into the top three or four, I can get a superstar. That is, as we've been saying for this entire show, completely off the table.
Pretty much. But it would not shock me too, Rick, with a lot of the second round at this point, that there could be one or two guys who turn out to be all-star caliber or a guy who is a starting caliber guy that gets a lot of talk, like a Chris Middleton or that. So
yeah.
There are some guys still available in the second round, but it's a lot of just questions. There's Max Christie's brother, Cam Christie from Minnesota, Kevin McCullers, who sat out for most of Kansas, who sat out most of the NCAA tournament with a knee injury. And then one guy who I've kind of heard some stuff about, but haven't really discussed a lot about, would be Adam Bolano of UCLA, who at the combine was measured at a 7'4 wingspan. So that, I think there's going to be a couple guys here, especially in the later part of the first half, who could be guys who end up being rotation players. Two kids from Arizona, Keshav Johnson and, I'm blanking on the name, so Mayapel Lawson, are also guys who are in that mid-second round right now, or like early mid-second round, who could be impact players moving forward.
They could be, and lost in all of the draft analysis here that we've been doing has been any mention of players in the draft this year for Overtime Elite, which I was able to go check out in person over the holidays. Myself and my nephew went down to a game there. Awesome, awesome experience there. Got in for $5. As much as my nephew was so happy about that and looking forward to going back subsequently, I said, hey, it may not be $5 every night. Maybe it's just a special tonight or whatever. Maybe it's flex pricing. But a great experience that I highly recommend. But it's not where it was a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago as far as having these top caliber prospects. They may get a guy drafted in the second round, but I have yet to even see that being the case. The NIL has really put a bite on them the same way that it did on the G League Ignite, which is actually folding outright. There is a financial incentive for Overtime Elite to stick around because it is something that's financed by outside investors. You have the social media component to it, so it's actually a media company that has the sporting component to it. But as far as being any part whatsoever of this year's draft class in any way that is significant, not the case.
No, but it's going to be very interesting to see the future of Overtime Elite and just how, you know, they're going to survive. I know recently too, Rick, is that for the upcoming prospect draft class, they got the ESPN's top 7 ranked for 2025 Malik Thomas. So okay. I still think very similar to the NBL, where we're still seeing guys who play in the NBL get looks at the NBA. I feel like both of those will still serve some guys who want to go to college and would rather go to a pro narrative. Uh-huh. But I do agree with you with NIL money and with the amount of money that these kids can make now, there seems like to be much more of a push to go back to college because at least you still get to, because as we discussed, Rick, the college experience is still very unique. The only difference really is that if you want to be a pro now or if you want to, you know, hone your game at a professional level.
Well, not only that, it's a circumstance too where I got to think, I've said on the NFL side that where I think you will see NIL making an impact in particular in keeping guys in school is at the running back position, because the NFL really devalues the running back position. You're on that rookie contract, and then like a lot of times teams don't want to step up for the second contract because of the perception that your legs are going to be gone before the second contract is done. So I think the prospect of delaying going onto that rookie contract and spending an extra year or two and really getting paid, I'm predicting that the running back position is going to be the one position. You'll never see it at quarterback. You'll never see it at wide receiver or any of the other positions. But because of the peculiarity of the running back position and the fact that, again, should there have been something set aside in the collective bargaining for that? Yeah, I think the union probably let the running backs down on that one, but that'll never be changed. And I think that's where it'll have an impact. Similar to that, I think college basketball, I think there will be the opportunity for boosters, NIL, et cetera, to be able to step up and keep guys in school maybe for a second year in some instances because of what the rookie deals pay in the NBA. So because you're not looking at anything like, oh, well, you know, you can go like, make the, you know, quarterback money in the NFL, even on a rookie deal. That doesn't really tend to exist in the NBA by and large. So you may see in the years to come, I think, the capacity here and there to keep a star player for a second year on that college money.
Right, and or another scenario that I also see, Rick, are some of these blue chip schools having multiple prospects come in and now not necessarily leaving after year one if they're not projected in the first round.
Right.
And on top of that, too, I would also be moved to note that it could be a good thing to see more guys come in and play. Over the weekend, I saw David Letterman interview special with Charles Barkley, and one of the things that he noticed that he felt that we're seeing less superstars and less ready-made players, essentially, today's NBA because of guys leaving after 1 year in college, where essentially most guys are just projects at
yes.
the end of the day.
That's true. And, again, you're seeing a lot of instances where there's a hope, and sometimes even in the G League, a sense that like, or Overtime Elite, oh, hopefully these guys will learn to shoot in that 1 year. And for as much of an intrigue as it was with the Thompson twins coming into the draft last year, neither one of them had really learned how to shoot in college, especially from distance. And that's something that they're still learning in the pros. So it's a thing where you're getting elite level defense from them right off the bat, but they are still developmental at best offensively, and you're squinting and kind of hoping that they can become that superstar two-way player, a Jimmy Butler or better, who can be at that level. And that's where, again, that 1 year a lot of times isn't enough to do it. And in that 1 year, you can be a guy like Ron Holland and unfortunately regress perceptually to where you fall out of the top five. And, well, if you're lucky, go in the top 10. And the same holds true for Cody Williams with his experience at Colorado.
Yeah, and I always say, too, it's like, space for college coaches now with NIL, college basketball sense, to keep their teams together because the boosters can offer them a little bit more than anything else.
Yep.
But the question I ultimately see is going to be one of the big questions for a lot of players moving forward is it better to go into that sort of professional lifestyle like the overtime elite or the NBL or play overseas where you get to learn how to be a professional? Mm-hmm. Or is it better to go to college and play against potentially inferior talent and then when you get to the league, you have to then bridge the gap?
Yeah, and that's where, again, there's a lot of questions about this, and you see different examples of success and failure from players trying it different ways. Those who've played internationally, we have seen, starting with, again, and you and I have long talked about this on the show, that from the mid-2000s up to almost the time of Luka being drafted in 2018, there was a sense that Euros were suspect by and large. There really weren't any of them making an impact. You had Giannis out of the 2014 draft, but that still took him 2 or 3 years to start to become what he is. And now it's a little bit more commonplace, and it's a sense of like, oh, yeah, okay, this guy's over there in the Euro League, and he's playing against adults. That's impressive. So, you know, we've sort of flipped the script on that. And, again, the fact that you have a couple of the top players in this draft being guys, Sarr, Rizacier, potentially both out of France, going, I think, 1-2 right now as I have them slotted. In my mock draft. So you've seen a little bit of that where there's the sense of like, oh, this is great. They're playing against adults. They're playing against whatever. But then there's also the whole thing, too, of, you know, when you're playing against top-level talent in the NCAA, and we see that, as we said before, the UConn kids and a couple of them, Zach Edey, really helped raise their stock during this year's tournament. Again, more than you would see in a year where there's a really good draft class. You know, they weren't swimming against as much resistance, shall we say, in rising up the boards. But, you know, that really is sort of the endless sort of debate, and I don't expect it to necessarily get sorted out in the years to come. What's the best way to go in these situations here? For the international kids, I think probably still playing internationally is the best way to go. I don't think they're suffering perceptually or developmentally for not going to college.
Right, and it's going to be one of the big questions, too, especially. And with a lot of kids getting more money and the opportunity to really, it's the whole debate about, is it better for you to go to college, play that 1 or 2 years, and then hope that your game translates to that, or have to rub it out essentially overseas, where your numbers might not be as great, but you have at least the experience going up against legitimate big-time competition.
Uh-huh.
Or veteran, or I like to say not necessarily that, but just learning how to be a pro and learning how to play against guys who are in their mid-20s or early 30s.
Okay, yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think, again, there's of the different paths, a lot of these different players, there have been successes and failures that we could point to with them, and that's part of what makes it interesting, and especially relative to the NFL, where by and large there only is the one path. And here it's a little bit more debatable as far as which way that it goes. And again, it seems like it's situationally geared towards whether we're talking about an international prospect, a domestic one, et cetera. So a lot of different permutations in any type of draft year. But again, this one in particular with really nothing in the way of sure thing superstars, much less stars. And again, but a number of players who could get there under the right circumstances, if they grow fairly significantly off of where they're at right now. So it's not a great draft class by any stretch of the imagination, but will it be more like 2001, which was fully disappointing, 2011, which was the great draft we never saw coming, or more likely somewhere in the middle? It will be interesting to track this in the years to come, and nobody better to track it with than you, Ben Chu, FDH Hoops Analyst. Thank you, as always, my friend.
No, I appreciate it, Rick.
Thanks, Ben, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1732.